The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne, and you are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. You are listening to episode 46 of Residue, titled A Ninja, A Machete, and A Love Triangle. And with a title like that, you know I have to give you a trigger warning. As always with Residue, please listen with caution. Listener discretion is advised. Mayhem is a criminal offense that involves violently injuring someone to the point that they are less able to defend themselves. Examples of mayhem include disabling a limb such as an arm, hand, finger, leg, foot, or eye, causing permanent brain damage, slashing someone's face, lodging an object in someone's eye, striking someone's forehead with a hammer, scratching someone's eye in a fight, causing them to go blind, and even dressing up like a ninja, wielding a machete, and hacking a man until he dies. ...28-year-old Mary Endicott was just dancing the night away at a club in California. That is when she came upon a handsome man named Frank Sharpsky. Frank was 2 years older at age 30, and he thought that Mary looked like the hottest girl in the room the moment he had laid his eyes upon her. Frank's brother Bob recalls in a laughing and joking manner that Frank was very attracted to Mary because she was a busty blonde, and that is exactly what Frank loved. Family and friends would say that Frank and Mary were this very affectionate, public display of affection type of couple. They were always holding hands, they were always kissing, and they just seemed like the happiest couple on earth. Even though these two were happily in love, it came as a shock to most of their friends and family that the two actually just eloped to Vegas and ended up getting married only 6 months after meeting each other in that California nightclub. Frank invited his friends, but he did not invite his family, and so his family didn't even find out about this marriage until it had already happened. But they were so happy for him because Frank was in love and he wanted to start his life and start a family with Mary. And as quickly as this couple got married, they also ended up having their first child only a year after the marriage. Mary and Frank welcomed a baby girl and then shortly after ended up having two more children. This is when the couple decides it is time to buy our first home and they end up moving to Fullerton, California. The family lived a comfortable life. Even after a decade of marriage, Frank and Mary were still seemingly happily in love. Mary was a stay-at-home mom, and Frank had his own package delivery business. Frank worked his ass off to support his family. I'm talking, this man worked 14 to 16-hour days. He was hardly ever home, but he had a wife and three children to support and a brand new home. While Frank is working his ass off delivering packages, Mary is taking care of the kids. But Mary has a new favorite pastime, and that favorite pastime is to go shopping. Frank is working his ass off, Mary is shopping her ass off, and Frank couldn't support this type of lifestyle. He is barely able to pay his mortgage, his bills. He can barely feed his children at this point. Mary has racked up so much in credit card debt. It is insane. It has now gotten to the point where Frank is asking his brother Bob for money just to pay his bills. He is still working 14 to 16 hour days, but now he still needs the help of his family to even be able to have a roof over his family's head. Which brings me to the next point. Frank is going to now have to file bankruptcy, and he's going to have to sell his home. This home that he worked so hard for. He sells their home and he moves his family of five into a tiny apartment in an apartment complex. The family has just downgraded to a two-bedroom apartment with a family of five, and Frank is feeling a little frustrated and doesn't know where to go from here. Mary is just straight up pissed and a little bit frustrated that she has to live in an apartment now. She's also upset that she can't continue her lifestyle of just shopping all day. Mary starts complaining to Frank's family about what an asshole he is. Now, she's calling Frank's brother and she's telling him that Frank never comes home, and when he does come home late at night, he just drinks one beer and then he goes to sleep. And Frank's brother Bob is like, yeah, dude, he just worked 14 hours a day. By the time he gets home, everyone else is in bed. He has a beer. He goes to sleep, gets back up, does it all over again. So now Mary is aware that no one in Frank's family is on her side, especially since the kids are pretty much grown at this point, and Frank has begged Mary to get a job of any kind to just help out a little bit. But she said no. So Mary is going to find herself a brand new friend that she can vent to. Enter Michael Shores, next door neighbor in the apartment complex, who is described as a big kid. He is a martial arts expert, and he is just your all-around nice guy and everyone's friend. The kids in the neighborhood adore Michael. Probably because he was basically home all day doing nothing, and so he would go out into the courtyard of the apartment complex and joke around with the kids. So Mary decides, instead of getting a job and trying to help her family out, that the best option would be to befriend this grown adult who behaves like a child. Mary and Michael become BFFs. They are constantly together. Neither one of them have a job because at this point, Michael has now lost his job. So they spend their entire days together. Mary said she needed this friendship. She felt like she was happy now. And Michael starts introducing Mary to other friends of his. She is introduced to a man named Antonio Ortega, who is actually 12 years younger than Michael. Michael and Antonio are like brothers. they have a ton in common. They both love martial arts. They both love knives, swords. They collect the knives and swords. And Mary loved hanging out with these two. Michael and Antonio listened to Mary, and they listened to her vent about Frank a lot. All Mary ever did is complain about how Frank didn't appreciate her. Michael would actually say that he didn't understand why God would give Frank such a beautiful family that he didn't deserve. It is around this point that Michael is unable to pay his rent for his own apartment because he hasn't had a job. And so he asks Mary if he can move in with Frank, Mary, and their three children. And Mary says, yeah, of course. That sounds like the perfect idea. In our two-bedroom apartment, why don't you come join us? Frank ends up agreeing to this. He says that he was just so busy and so tired and stressed out. He was like, yes, sure. Actually, if Michael does move in, maybe he can help you with the kids, Mary, and you can get a job. Or maybe he can help us out with the rent a little bit. He tells Michael, yes, okay, you can sleep on our couch, but you only have about 2 to 3 months. I need you to get a job and I need you to get your own apartment within that time period. Now, if this man, Frank, is supposedly beating his wife and abusing her and the children, why would Frank let this man move into a two-bedroom apartment with them? Since Frank is gone so much, now working as a delivery driver for FedEx, he isn't aware of the fact that his children are now calling Michael dad. It is about 5:30 in the morning on March 3rd, 2009. Frank is going to be leaving his apartment and heading over to his FedEx vehicle because he is about to start his day. As Frank is walking through the alleyway of his apartment, he sees a man coming towards him who is wearing all black. A black face mask, a black trench coat, black boots, and he sees something sort of glimmer in his hand. This is when Frank notices that this man is carrying what he believes to be a machete. This man starts walking towards Frank and just slicing at him. Frank is trying to run away, and every time he tries to get away, he stumbles and he falls. Frank is now laying on the ground, and witnesses say that they could see this man dressed in all black just swinging back and forth nonstop. One witness even tells the police that they saw sparks flying because the machete was hitting the ground with such force. Neighbors are screaming at this man. They are screaming and telling him, "We are calling the police. You need to stop." So many neighbors called 911 that police arrive on the scene pretty quickly. Frank says that he didn't feel any pain at that exact moment and that he did recall seeing a police officer show up on a motorcycle. He said all he could see while laying on the ground was the police officer's motorcycle boots walk up towards Frank's face, look down at him and say, "Oh my God, stay down. You're going to be okay. Just don't move." Frank was rushed to the nearest hospital with 3 fingers cut off. 90% of his nose was off of his face. He had major lacerations all over his entire body, and he was partially scalped. Frank had a visibly fractured skull, and he was bleeding out. Frank was immediately put into an induced coma the moment that he arrived at the hospital. Hospital staff said that this did not look promising. Back at the apartment complex, police are trying to secure the scene. There is a massive amount of blood splatter everywhere. from the moment that Frank fell onto the ground, that entire part of the ground is covered in blood. But there's a trail of blood just leading through the entire apartment complex as the assailant ran away. Right away, police are interviewing everyone in the neighborhood, and they do learn that Frank lived with his wife Mary, his three children, and a man named Michael. The neighbors tell the police that they did actually see Michael run from that apartment and come outside to try and help Frank. Michael was actually standing in his robe and pajamas, standing above Frank, trying to help him as police arrived on the scene. So at this point, police have no indication that Michael has anything to do with this. But you know who didn't come outside to help her husband? Mary. She didn't even look out the window. Mary never came outside, never sat by her husband's side as the police are there, the ambulance is there. Never. So police go to the apartment door and they ask Mary, "Hey Mary, what's up? Why didn't you come outside and try to help your husband who was dying on the ground?" Now this was when everything was secure. She was able to get out there at this point. The machete-wielding ninja had run away, so Mary is able to come outside and sit with her husband. She told the police that there was no way that she could see that scene. And you know what? That's true. Some people react differently to these types of situations. She said that Michael had run into the apartment and told her, "Do not go out there. You do not want to see this." And that would be a great thing to say to the police, except for the fact that Mary didn't have a tear in her eye. She had no emotion. She was completely stoic. And this is going to start tipping the police off a bit. Detectives are going to start talking to Mary and they're going to start talking to Michael, obviously. Michael starts to give them his theory on what could have possibly happened. Why do people do that? So Michael tells the police, "Yeah, you know what? It was probably a robbery." And the police are like, "I mean, that doesn't make any sense. They didn't take anything." And nobody slashes you to pieces with a machete to rob you. It's just not something that the police generally see happen. But they then start trying to interview the children that live in the apartment. They're asking them about Frank and Mary's relationship. They're asking them questions about the household. And the children start to tell the detectives, "My mom and Michael are dating." Their oldest daughter starts to tell police that Michael and Mary were not hiding their relationship at all. They weren't even trying to hide it in front of the kids. Of course, Michael and Mary are going to completely deny this. But the same way that Michael can't hold a job, Michael also can't hold a secret. So when police bring Michael in to the interrogation room a week after Frank's massacre, Michael just spills it all. Michael is going to tell the police that he and Mary are a couple. And not only were they fucking around behind Frank's back, but they also had plans to leave Frank. The kids were in love with Michael, and they called him dad. And this was Mary's happily ever after now. Mary was so grateful to have found someone like Michael that instead of just telling her husband that she wanted a divorce, she thought it would be so much easier to slice him with a machete in front of everyone in the apartment complex. This relationship had been going on for an entire year before Michael even moved in to the apartment with the family. So, police now have a motive established. There's this affair going on. Mary never asked how her husband was. You know another thing Mary did? Mary actually, the day that Frank was attacked, in the moment that he was put into a coma, Mary didn't ask how her husband was. Mary asked the police if they could go into his wallet and get his ATM card for her because she needed to pay some bills. Obviously, this affair has something to do with the fact that Frank was attacked. But who did it? Because at this point, the police know Michael didn't physically do it himself. There was unidentified DNA found at the scene. So police are now going to have to start investigating further to see who this DNA belonged to and what exactly was this person promised in exchange for attacking Frank. It did not take police very long after canvassing the neighborhood to find out that Michael had a BFF named Antonia Ortega. And surprisingly, Antonia loves machetes and knives. So police are not stupid, and neither are any of you. I know you all already guessed who this killer or wannabe killer was. So the police start looking for Antonio, and now they're going to put a surveillance on him. As police are following Antonio, he is driving his car kind of erratically at one point, so they do have cause to pull him over. And when they do pull him over, police notice that Antonio has a severe cut on his hand. The police then ask Antonio if they can search his car, and an officer finds knives in his trunk, but they don't find a machete. Police do have to let Antonio go, but they are very suspicious of him, and their game plan is, we're not going to let him know that we know anything. A week goes by after this traffic stop, and police still don't have any evidence to prove that Antonio did this, but someone is still following Antonio's every move, and as he walks into work one day, he just spits on the ground, and that officer is like, oh my god, hell yeah, boom, we got him. This officer gets out of his car, walks over to the spit, collects it, and submits it for DNA testing. While police are tracking Antonio and waiting on this DNA sample result to come back, Frank is still fighting for his life. Thankfully, Frank starts coming out of his coma at this exact moment that the police are on to Antonio. Knowing that Frank has just come out of his coma, police call his hospital room, and a nurse answers the phone, and the police are like, hello, we need to talk to Frank as soon as we can. This nurse starts telling them, okay, that is totally fine. Frank is going to be able to talk to you, but you're going to need to wait at least 2 or 3 days. This is when the police officer says, holy shit, this isn't a nurse, this is Mary. Give an award to these detectives because they sprinted over to Frank's hospital room and they needed to tell him, Frank, we are focused on your wife. You cannot communicate with her. Because at this point, Frank hasn't been awake since the day that he was slashed with the machete. So he has no idea that his wife and Michael are in on this. Once police arrive to the hospital, Mary is gone, but Frank is able to tell them that when he did wake up, Mary and Michael were standing above his bed with a notary and a bunch of paperwork, and they were begging Frank to sign paperwork to hand over his power of attorney, and they were forcing the pen into his hand to sign this stuff. Frank said no. I mean, he just woke up from a coma. He decides to say no, hold off, and this is when police show up. Mary and Michael have already taken off, but this is the point when police inform Frank of everything, and Frank lets them know what just happened with the paperwork. And thankfully, Frank actually does sign over power of attorney to his brother Bob. Bob actually speaks on an episode of Snapped, She Made Me Do It. This was episode season 1, episode 3, Mary Sharpsky. This was one of my main sources for this episode today. But Bob tells the Snapped crew that when he did find out that Mary was involved in this, he also found out that Mary knew that Frank had a $25,000 life insurance policy. And Bob jokingly says to the show, Mary never really was that good with money, was she? He says, I mean, she thought she was just going to run away and start a complete new life with $25,000. That's not going to last her very long. When Mary finds out that Frank has signed over her power of attorney to Bob, she's going to lose her damn mind. She is screaming in the hospital. She is screaming at doctors and nurses. They're like, yo, we have nothing to fucking do with this lady. Back the fuck off. Mary's having a meltdown now. But at the same exact time, guess what comes back? The lab results for the DNA testing on Antonio Ortega are now in. And guess what they say? He's a match. Things seem to be moving along pretty nicely now for detectives. We now know that Antonio's blood was found at the scene, but we don't have a weapon. With the evidence that they do have, police are granted a warrant to search Antonio's house. They collect things like his shoes, they find knives, but they don't find any machetes. And at this point, Antonio is going to be brought in for questioning, but that boy ain't going to talk. He is going to deny, deny, deny. But luckily for all of us, Antonio has a girlfriend named April Bivens, and Antonio decides to use his one and only phone call from the police station to call April. And now police are obviously recording this phone call, but Antonio's fucking stupid, and he tells April on that phone call, "Hey, April, I really need you to clear out everything in my room for me. You know exactly what I'm talking about." And then Antonio whispers into the phone, "Behind the dresser." April Bivens is going to move Antonio's dresser, look behind it, and see a machete taped to the back of the dresser. She's not going to hide this for Antonio. No, April's a good one. April's going to go down to the police station and bring them the weapon. She is also going to speak to detectives and tell them that the day that Frank was attacked, she didn't know about the attack, but Antonio came home that day and she did actually help him cover up his wounds and get rid of his bloody clothes. Antonio is still going to deny this. I mean, at this point, police are stacked with evidence. But then they talk to Frank, and Frank tells them that he started to recall that there was a time when Mary and Michael were all of a sudden interested in his route for work. Where he will be, what time he gets there, which vehicle he's using. And Frank says that he just chalked this up as my wife being interested in my day-to-day. Detectives start to search Antonio's car again, and this time they're going to find directions to Frank's FedEx deliveries. I mean, come on, you guys have a ton of evidence at this point, and they're about to get even more. At this point, Frank and Mary's 16-year-old daughter is going to come forward. She tells detectives that there was a time right before the attack that she saw her mother, Michael, and Antonio in the apartment complex laundry room. She heard them all talking and she heard her mother sort of yelling and venting. So she was listening in, and what she could hear was her mother venting about how Frank really abused her and that they needed to get rid of Frank. This 16-year-old daughter didn't just hear them say, "Let's get rid of Frank." She heard them discuss the fact that Antonio should just slash Frank's throat so that he doesn't suffer. With all of this new information, police are now going to let loose on Mary and Michael and bring them both in for questioning. Mary is going to keep denying everything. She's going to be confronted with the fact that her daughter told police she heard this conversation, and Mary's going to say, "I was just venting. I was just venting to my two buddies." Police are going to be like, "Okay, cool, venting to your two buddies. So how do you explain this handwritten note to Antonio that we found in his car that is a drawing of your husband's FedEx route?" She says that, "Yeah, that's my handwriting, but I have no idea how Antonio got it." Mary and Michael can deny all they want that they had nothing to do with whatever Antonio did, but you two are the glue that holds this whole thing together. So, police have enough evidence already with just the affair and the handwritten route to arrest Mary and Michael. They tell Mary in the interrogation room, "You are under arrest for mayhem." And she looks right at them and says, "What's mayhem?" "Mayhem is when you cut people's fingers off," the detective says back to her. With Michael, Mary, and Antonio all under arrest, the trial is about to begin. Now, the prosecution is going to try all three of them together, and this trial begins on March 4th, 2011. All three, Michael, Antonio, and Mary, all plead not guilty to the charge of attempted murder and mayhem. the prosecution's opening statement is going to create Mary as the mastermind of this entire ordeal. They will tell the jury that Mary was a damsel in distress. She played the damsel in distress and that she had plotted this for 6 months prior to Frank being attacked. They will say that Mary would tell Mike and Antonio that Frank abused her to get them to feel like they had to come save her and be her saviors. The defense, on the other hand, is going to say that Mary was an abused wife, her children were abused, and that Frank was a controlling and violent husband. This entire family was being abused by Frank. Mary's defense team is going to say that Mike and Antonio did this on their own, that Mary only vented to these two men, and they were the ones that went ahead and decided that they needed to kill Frank. That is it. That's the end of the story for the defense. Frank had to sit there at the trial and hear the defense say that he was beating his children. Frank says that this was one of the worst days to have to sit there and be told that he's an abuser when he was the one that was attacked. Frank was the one that was harmed in this situation. And you know what? And now it just keeps feeling like he's getting hit again and again in this courtroom. And it doesn't get any better because at this point, it's going to be a split verdict. It is a hung jury. Frank is in shock, but we're going to try for trial number two. And now in this trial, these three are not going to be tried together. They are going to be tried independent from each other. And they are going to each face a separate jury. Antonio is going to go first on October 12th. 26-year-old Antonio Ortega is going to keep the same defense. He's going to keep saying, I didn't do it. I wasn't there. But that's not going to work for this jury. Antonio, on November 2nd, 2012, Antonio Ortega is found guilty and sentenced to 25 years to life. Next up, we're going to have Mary Sharpsky. She's going to go on trial, but she has just witnessed the fact that Antonio has been put away for 25 years to life. So Mary is going to agree to a plea deal. With this plea deal, the DA says that if Mary pleads guilty, then she will get 10 years and 4 months, and we will not go to trial. If she went to trial and lost, she would have gotten a life sentence. But Mary did only get 10 years and 4 months, and I would like to sadly report to you that Mary Sharpsky has been out of prison since 2022. Michael Shores is also going to take a plea bargain. He is going to be sentenced to 14 years. His earliest release date is in 2024. Michael still, to this day, insists that he is innocent. Frank Sharpsky said in his victim impact statement that he has struggled with post-traumatic stress disorder. He needed help penning his own letter to the judge and has only recently been healthy enough to use a walker, but with great difficulty. He says, Mary's actions have changed my life and my children's lives forever. I will never be able to have freedom from my injuries and disability. Frank says that he hopes Antonio never gets out of jail. He should serve a life sentence. And Frank Sharpsky says, I will be in a wheelchair for the rest of my life. So he should be in prison for the rest of his. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Residue. I appreciate you all so much. It means the world to me that you take the time to listen each week. I spend a lot of time on this podcast, and it just makes me feel so good that you're all enjoying it. Residue is produced, written, researched, hosted, and edited by me, Chrissy Champagne. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Residue Podcast, Facebook at Residue, a true crime podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with your friends. Let other people know about Residue. It would really help the show. I just have to leave you with one last message. You know what it is. As always, stay safe and stay paranoid.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No